Everybody went to work in the shipyard because that's where the money was.
Money, that's what everybody was interested in.
The American people accomplished an enormous amount during the war, building ships, building airplanes, living with rationed food and rationed gas. And so many people had loved ones overseas that contributing to the war effort was a way to ease the pain of separation and loss. Welcome to the Homefront Veterans Oral History Project. WMPG and Portland Harbor Museum collected 35 interviews with former workers at the Liberty Shipyards in South Portland, Maine. I'm Stephanie Philbrick, and in this edition, we'll hear former shipyard workers talk about how good-paying war production jobs affected their life. Taking a job in the shipyard was the patriotic thing to do, and workers were very proud of their work. But money was the big incentive that attracted workers, as Charles French explains.
The shipyard gave a lot of people a chance for a different life. Increased earnings, chance to save some money and put money away, which I tell you, at the time I was growing up, was rough. There was no money, no jobs. It was depression time.
It is my hope indeed that the new speed up of production will cause many businesses which now pay below the minimum standards to bring their wages up.
When I saved up the first $100, I thought I was rich. I hung on to that $100 for a long time.
Early on, we didn't have any money as a family. And where you had to wear steel-toed boots in the shipyard, I didn't have any money to buy the boots. We only had one pair between us, so my father would come off his shift in the morning at 7, and I would take his boots, his work boots, and he would wear my shoes back home. So this, you know, covered the law. Of course, as we got a little money ahead, things were a little different. I managed to have my own boots.
Now it's done, brother, can you spare a dime?
The Great Depression had started with the stock market crash of 1929 and lasted well into the 1930s. Maine's economy was slow to recover, and by the time war was declared in Europe in 1939, many people were still struggling to make a living. Nicholas Davis and Charles French talk about how the good-paying shipyard jobs affected quality of life.
And there was a lot of older men that they would talk about how glad they were to get a job, because after the Great Depression, you know, to be able to get a job and get that kind of money, it was just unreal. You know, they were able to pay a lot of bills they had for years and have a little more on the table and pay their rent on time, you know, and stuff like that. So it meant a lot.
When I worked for Corey Motor Company, I was making 30 cents an hour. When I went into the shipyard, we made 62.5 cents an hour, which was almost double.
I was making $33 a week at first, and then in about just 3 or 4 months, the union came in, and when the union came in, we got $108 a week instead of $33. So that was quite a raise. And it was so good that we were expecting our first child then, and we were putting away $20 a week in a jar at home so that when the baby was born, the hospital bill was all paid.
It all happened so that my cleaner that I was working for at the time was in Biddeford, and he couldn't get the cleaning fluid to clean the clothes with, so I was laid off. So then I said, well, I'll apply at the shipyard. Of course, it was a lot better pay, too.
Well, yeah, when I was getting $1.20 an hour, I thought that was about the best you could do. Yeah, that was a first-class ship fitter. I got $1.20 an hour. And with today, that wouldn't seem like much, but in those days, it was pretty good.
Not only did the shipyards pay good wages, they offered training to inexperienced laborers. That meant fishermen, farmers, housewives, textile mill workers, and students from all over the state and New England could go to the yards and get a good job. Workers like Frank Bonville, Rita Desolettes, and Parker Savage came from rural Maine to work in the shipyards.
I was working at Western Union in Presque Isle, and the evening shift, and during the summer, the only time there was any work painting, I was working with my father. So I had two jobs and just barely getting by. You didn't get much. I wanted a raise from Western Union, and the boss said, no, you're getting enough as it was. So at that time, I think it was $16 a week. So I gave my notice and moved down here and went over to the shipyard, and the first day I got there at 9 o'clock, and about 7 o'clock at night, there was a line, likes of which you never saw. It looked like it stretched for half a mile, just waiting to get in there. They sent us home, because they weren't taking any more that day. And get back the next morning, early. And by 9 o'clock, I was in, and by 9:30, I had a job.
Well, we had been laid off here in Sanford, because there wasn't any work. So we decided to go to the shipyard and apply for a job. So they took us in, and they taught us how to weld.
They just weren't paying wages in these small towns. And what I was getting in the mill, it got so we could hardly get by, you know. Not that I didn't like the job. We both all grown up here, went to school here and everything. My father-in-law had gone down. He kept telling me, come down. They were paying a lot better money than we were getting up here. And I went and told my boss that I was getting done. I was going down the shipyard, and they needed men here, too, just like they needed them in the shipyard. So he tried to talk me out of it and told me that, well, he thought the war was going to be over within 6 months. I remember that when I was sitting in a foxhole about a year later.
As more and more men were drafted into military service, older men, teenagers, and women were asked to join the workforce. Even though these so-called non-traditional laborers worked in greater numbers than ever before, by 1943 there was a labor shortage. Because thousands of workers were needed to keep the shipyards operating around the clock, employers were sometimes lax about hiring rules. Frank Rodway was 16 when he applied for a shipyard job, and Jack Gibson was just 13.
There were many, many people working at the shipyard, and I, as a high school student, went over and got on the end of the employment line. And when I got up to the place of hiring, the man looked at my application and said, you can't work here. And I said, why? He said, you're too young. And I said, well, how old do you have to be to work at the shipyard? And he said, you have to be 17. And I said, all right, do you have another application? And he said, oh, yes. And he gave me another application. And I went to the end of the line and changed the birth date and came up 20 minutes later to where he was. And he said, fine, what do you want to do? I said, I don't have any idea.
You had to go for a physical. And I figured the doctor was going to take one look at me and say, Mr. Gibson, how old are you? But he never asked the question. I went through the physical and had my picture taken and got my badge, and I was a bona fide employee of the shipyard.
Many homefront jobs, and especially those in the shipyard, were demanding with shifts around the clock 7 days a week. But the war was on everyone's mind. Husbands, sons, boyfriends, and brothers were fighting brutal battles, and deep down, the shipyard workers like Gertrude Jordan, Alexander Frustaci, and Gloria Stover hoped that their work would contribute to victory.
Yeah, we were building ships, and everybody did their job and was proud to do it. Here we are, money's coming in, you know, everybody's working, and we're at war, and they really, everybody pulled together.
Because I felt I was lending to the war effort. I was a pre-Pearl Harbor father, which precluded me being drafted. So I was tickled to death to be able to help the boys across there by helping build these ships.
You had this feeling of being extremely patriotic. It was you felt real good that you were doing this big thing for Uncle Sam.
The Homefront Veterans Oral History Project is a joint project of WMPG and Portland Harbor Museum. This program was produced by Stephanie Philbrick. Funding was provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Institute for Museum and Library Services. In-kind support was provided by the Shipyard Brewing Company. A special thank you goes out to Ted Jordan and his American History class at Cape Elizabeth High School. And of course, this project would not have been possible without the men and women who built Liberty ships during World War II. For more information about this project, or to hear additional clips from these interviews, click on the Rosie the Riveter icon on the WMPG website at www.wmpg.org.